June is National Indigenous History Month and Pride Month. In this episode, we explore some aspects of gender identity and Two-Spirit individuals. Two-Spirit reflects complex Indigenous understandings of gender roles, spirituality, and the long history of sexual and gender diversity in Indigenous cultures.
Good morning, Breezy Breakfast. It is the last day of June, June 30th. This month, we have been celebrating both Indigenous History Month and Pride Month. And so today, we decided that we would explore what is gender. Help us, and we're looking for a better understanding about what gender is and why things have gotten different for so many people over the last little while, as well as getting an understanding of what is Two-Spirit. Today, we have Barry Moore from Out on the Shelf and Arch, as well as Holly George, a Two-Spirit Indigenous Knowledge Keeper. We have Mode from Trans Artivist and Christy, a Indigenous maker here in Guelph. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to ask each of our guests to do a very, very brief introduction of who they are. Then I'm going to start with Barry, asking a couple of questions to help us get a little bit of an understanding of what is involved with all the different words that we hear when we're trying to understand gender. We'll see a very short video to help us understand a little bit about Two-Spirit. I'll be asking Holly to provide us with some education about Two-Spirit as a knowledge keeper. And Mode and Christy will help us understand more about the journeys that happen for people that identify in ways that are not binary or are different from how they were assigned gender at birth. So with that, I'd like to invite Barry to do a very brief introduction of who they are, and then we'll move to Holly, Mode, and Christy. So Barry, give us a short introduction to yourself.
Hello, everyone. So I'm Barry. I use they, them, and he, him pronouns. I am the chair of the board for Out on the Shelf, which is Guelph's queer community center. We also run a queer library and have monthly programming as well, specifically for the queer community in Guelph. And I'm also the capacity builder at ARCH, which is Guelph's HIV services organization. And so I'm part of the education team, and I do education and outreach. My primary focus is on queer men, but also I'm involved in sort of the general trans and LGBT youth programming as well.
Excellent, Barry. And I have a feeling some of our regular Breezy Breakfast goers will recognize that I did not do a land acknowledgement this morning. Part of the reason why I did not do a land acknowledgement this morning is because we do have Holly with us. And while I do believe that it is important, I didn't write one out this morning because I really wanted to provide the space for Holly to let us know more about why that is important and why it's important to make sure that we do it at a more personal level rather than a recitation. So Holly, if you wouldn't mind just adding that into your introduction, I'd be very appreciative, and let us know who you are and what we might learn from you today.
Sure. Bonjour, Masku Gijigo Kwe Dishnakas Nimado Dem Ajdenan Donjaba Padawatami Ojibwe Nish Mani Duagi Kwe. What I've just said to you now in the Anishinaabe language is a traditional greeting and welcoming. That word not only greets your being, but that is including your spirit. So this morning I'm greeting your spirit in a good way. My name is Muskogeejigo Kwe, which translates to Red Sky Woman, which further translates into new beginnings or new days. So I'm a bringer of new days and new beginnings. I belong to the Sturgeon Clan, which is a teaching clan, and here I am to do just that. I'm a band member to the Chippewas and Kettle and Stony Point First Nation, which is between the Sarnia and London area. and presently living, working, and playing on the Haldimand Tract, which is the city of Kitchener. And to your point about land acknowledgements, just very briefly, indeed they are important for sure, but there's nothing worse than being an Indigenous person in the crowd and seeing and listening to somebody reading a script. So I generally ask people to acknowledge the land from their heart, from their spirit, and whatever it is that you say in that acknowledgement is good and right, because it comes from heart, because it comes from spirit, and it doesn't come from that script.
So Mode, introduce us to you and your project.
Good morning, I'm Mode Stephanie. My pronouns are they, them. I am the founder of Trans Artivist Project. We are located here in Guelph, and our mandate is to support two-spirit and or trans and spectrum individuals using arts-based practices in a community setting. What that translates into is basically running programs that support trans and two-spirit folks using different things such as painting or music, co-creating literatures and stuff like that, in order to support ourselves, to better our lives, and to also share our experiences with each other and community.
Excellent. Thank you so very much, Mode. And Christy, give us a brief introduction to you.
Hi, so I'm Christy Bell. I am two-spirited, she, they, from Algonquin of Kitigansabe Bear Clan. I am unregistered. I am rather disassociated, but I run a small spiritual business here in Guelph where I hand make most of my products. I grow all my own herbs at home, and I base most of my work as far back as I can go in history and from all of my cultural backgrounds.
Thank you so much, Christy. So to get us started in the conversation of understanding gender, I'd like to invite Barry to get us started with a little bit more information about what is the work that happens at Out on the Shelf and why it is so important that both Out on the Shelf and Arch exist.
Yeah, sure. So Out on the Shelf is a bit more focused on the social aspect of the work that we do for the work that needs to be done for the queer community. So we provide really a safe space for members of the LGBTQIA plus community to come together and really just socialize and have fun. You know, we aren't necessarily doing the direct, you know, counseling and support sort of work. So we have monthly social programs, and we're also the parent organization to Guelph Pride, which does two Pride festivals per year, one in February, which is a little bit more targeted towards students because that's when University of Guelph students are here, but certainly we have a variety of events that go on, and then one in June during Pride Month, which tends to be a little bit more focused in the downtown core, and sort of reaching, you know, folks in Guelph in general. But yeah, so it's really about providing that safe space, I think, where people can know that the activities that they're enjoying, they are, you know, surrounded by people who have similar experiences to them and some amount of understanding of things that they've gone through. And then over at Arch, the work that we're doing is more aligned with that educational work and that support work. And so we're going out into the community and, you know, educating other service providers so that queer people here are treated better and have better lives. And, you know, I think the work overlaps a lot, certainly. So it's not to say that these are completely separate endeavors. These are very related. You know, these are very related goals. All of it is for supporting the queer community. And so we also do a lot of work together, both organizations. There's a lot of collaboration, and it's always fun, you know, at the beginning of May when suddenly everyone starts emailing saying they want to do something for Pride Month, always figuring out, you know, which hat do I need to put on for this one? Are they asking for something that's more of a social event? They can maybe do something with Gulf Pride, or are they asking for, you know, an educational workshop? Maybe I'm going to put on the Arch hat for this one instead.
Great. And Barry, I had the opportunity to actually meet you at Pride in the Park, which was a great event.
This Pride Festival that just passed was the first time we had in-person events again in 2 years. So our last Guelph Pride Festival that happened in person was February 2020, and then everything has been online since then. So it had been a little while for sure. I guess it would have been June 2019 that we had a Pride in the Park event, I think. And yeah, it's always been a very popular one, and certainly people missed that while it was gone. And so it will definitely be coming back. It's usually the biggest event for the June festival. It's just really such a large scale event and targeted at families. And so we want a lot of people to come out. And yeah, so, and it was great. It was great to see it happen again and to see so many people come out. And a lot of people also really, really coming out to support and donate and asking about volunteering. And so it was great to see out on the shelf and Guelph Pride are entirely volunteer run. And so yeah, the more people coming out to show that kind of support, the better.
That is awesome. Now there is one question that some of us are really wondering, and I'm hoping that you can start us off on understanding this, and maybe Mode, Holly, and Christy will have little bits that they want to add in, or maybe big bits that they wish to add. We're wondering, what is the difference between gender fluid and non-binary?
Yeah, for sure. I think actually, if this might be a little bit of a tangent, but one thing that I wanted to mention when I was thinking about discussing this topic, because I think one of the big questions that often people will have that I think is important to talk about is sort of this question of, you know, there are so many terms, and I think people get worried a lot that they're not going to know all of these different labels and terms. And so I always think it's really important to first address the fact that, you know, no one is expecting you to know everything. I think people get a little bit overwhelmed. Even people within the community get a little overwhelmed thinking, I don't understand what all of this means. And, you know, this isn't a perfect comparison necessarily, but I mean, it's the same as no one's expecting you to just know everyone's name. You know, it's as simple as really asking someone. You know, we talk about sharing pronouns in our names on, you know, online meetings and in emails and email signatures and things like that. And so I think it's important to address the fact that it's just about having the same kind of respect you show someone when you're asking them what their name is. You know, it's about understanding that it's going to be different for each person. And also recognizing that labels can be very useful and very liberating. They can give people words for understanding themselves and explaining themselves to others. But they can also be very limiting sometimes. They don't, you know, we don't have a word for everything necessarily. And that's why we keep having new ones come up. I'm going to repeat myself. Labels can still be very limiting as much as they can be very liberating. And so, yeah, it's just important to recognize that everyone's an individual. And at the end of the day, it's just about asking and being open to the conversation and respecting what they tell you. But again, that kind of gets away from the question you asked. So the question that you asked, gender fluidity usually, and again, this might not apply for everyone. So I think that's sort of why I brought that up, because I can give a definition, but at the end of the day, it might mean something else to someone else. And it's important to respect that and to just understand what a term means for that person. But I think generally gender fluidity would refer to someone who maybe feels that gender isn't necessarily a consistent thing from day to day or even from moment to moment. So they might use a variety of pronouns. As I've already mentioned, I myself use they, them, and he, him. I pretty much use those interchangeably, but for someone else, there it might be a situation of today I feel like using they, them, today I feel like using he, him, today I feel like using she, her. And so it's really about that moment to moment feeling. And then I think when we talk about non-binary, we're usually referring to someone who feels that their gender is really separate from the usual binary way that we are taught to look at gender. We're taught to see gender as, you know, there are two options, he and her. And when someone identifies as non-binary, they're generally indicating that their gender is something outside of that, or sometimes even in opposition to that. Sometimes it's very rooted in a political identity. I think it's important to recognize that it's not, I think sometimes people often see it as like a third gender, and that's not really the idea. We're not saying that it's now some sort of system of just three. It's about saying, you know, I'm not about this binary idea of what gender is. But yeah, hopefully some of the others can also add to that, because like I said, it is also so personal, so it's hard to give a specific definition that's going to fit everyone.
And Mode, would you like to add anything to this part of the discussion?
I wanted to actually riff off of what Barry had been talking about in terms of that it's personal. You know, when I say that I am gender fluid, I mean that my gender is always in flux. One moment I could be feeling particularly feminine, I might feel particularly masculine, I might feel like I am no gender, and at other times I might feel like I'm all the genders that could possibly exist all at once. So it's important to think of it as being personal. And when we are open to having conversations about our identities and how we feel about ourselves, that's when we have the opportunity to learn about each other and to see each other as just being another person who has their own identity, and not to make assumptions about what people are based on their outward appearance.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that extra little bit of dialogue helping us understand that it is very personal. If either Christy or Mode would like to add anything to that, please feel free to Holly or Christy, feel free to unmute. Go ahead, Christy.
I'd be happy to. I'm gonna say my personal view, as everyone else was saying, it's more of a personal thing. I see us all as just souls driving bodies. To be honest, if you would like to define as anything else, that's perfectly appropriate. That's the way we were brought into this world. This is the way things are, and we're all breaking cycles at the same time. But I don't see us all as male, female, whichever you want to define as. I see it all as just we're energy souls driving this meat package around, and we need to just accept each other for who we are, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it does. And I think this might be a good point for us to view a very short video. It does help to help us as settlers to understand what Two-Spirit means to an extent. The video is Dr. Myra Laramie. She is a member of the Fisher River Cree Nation, born and raised in Winnipeg, Manitoba. She is a knowledge keeper and ceremony person. She's also been an educator for over 40 years, and she tries to keep the knowledge alive through teaching young people. Two-Spirit came to Myra in a dream, and to protect the dream that Myra had of Two-Spirit, only a portion of what she shares is included in this recording.
Bonjour, Dance. New Gavwe conditioning class. Masquanita tem. Ogijita kwe conditioning class. I come from a place in Manitoba that has carried a very, very, very large body of Indigenous people from all over Canada. And that's the city of Winnipeg. The Niju Manituk, as we say in Anishinaabemowin, that was how that name was given to me. And it's taken its own journey around, actually around the world. And there are a number of us who want to slow down, come back, and to be able to bring an understanding and not a definition, because it cannot be defined. The grandfathers came in a dream, the grandmothers showed all of us the gift and the greatness of two spirit. One night, 7 orbs of light, as I was standing out on the grass, it was like the teepee disappeared and everything that, except the tobacco in my hand and the way in which I could see them through those legislature lights, they came one after the other, 7 of them. And each time one came, there was a male face and a female face that would transform back and forth. And the first time the grandpa came, the Mushum face came, he said, "You are of as of us. You are one of us. And you have been here like us since the beginning of time. And you have come to know which way and how we travel the earth and the sky world and the spirit world." And he said, "You will begin to know many different kinds of things about the two-spirit nation. It's a nation of many means and many gifts and many ways. But the easiest and the best way is to see that your gift is to see the world always in two sights, with two feelings of the heart. It's neither male or female, but it's both. It's neither up or down, but it's in the middle. It's complex. It's a complex understanding, but it's a real understanding if you just let yourself simmer down and not try to be something you're not." And so in that engagement of spirit and heart, we will always know who we are. It will never be taken away from us again, ever, 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 ever.
So I hope that has helped everyone a little bit in understanding where the term two-spirit came from. And Holly, I would love for you to explain why you felt that this was one of the best ways for us to begin to understand two-spirit.
If I can just, in a way, translate that, the two-spirit people, as you heard, are a gift to family and community. They walk in two worlds, both the physical and the spirit world. So our very existence is always a connection to spirit. And the gift to family and community is, you know, being able to see and hear from a very wide perspective. The two-spirit people are man, woman, and everyone in between, or all-encompassing. And like we've heard from, you know, our other guests, it is complex. And we've heard that from Dr. Laramie as well. Very personal, very complex. Whatever is good and right in your heart and your spirit, if that's who you feel you are, that's who you are. Fluidity is very much a basis of the two-spirit identity. But also, It's very much a traditional role and responsibility. Important to say that it's an identity, but people need to understand it's a traditional role and responsibility. And she wasn't so overt in saying that. So the Two-Spirit people, because of their fluid nature, are able to step in places and spaces, in fire keeping, which for I'm using it as an example because it's coming to me now. Fire keeping, the sacred fire has for a long time been known and understood as something of a man's job to keep fire. But there's many examples where there's just not enough men available. That's where the Two-Spirit people fit in. We are very much, because of our fluid nature, able to fill the gaps. And it's a traditional role and responsibility in ceremony. It's a traditional role and responsibility in our families and in our community, because of that perspective, because of fluidity. And colonization has really impacted our community in that we've become very rigid. And we can see that even reflected, in today in our ceremonies. Ceremonies are very much on the gender binary, but we also see progress in our communities welcoming the Two-Spirit people back into those ceremonial circles, social circles, the variety of different circles. The Two-Spirit people are the creatives, the visionaries. They are the helpers and the healers. They are the hunters and gatherers as well. And if we have to translate that into colonial language, when we talk about, being able to walk in two worlds, the physical and spiritual world, we are the seers. We are the medicine people. We're the intuitives, the empaths, gifts of foresight, those kinds of things. So it's an enormous responsibility to be a Two-Spirit person, and it's a responsibility that I take seriously, actually, as I walk this journey called life or the red road. And my hope is just that in recommending that video, that people know where that term comes from. That term does not come from me, that comes from spirit. And it was that message was brought to Dr. Laramie. And it's just part of the history that people need to know, that term, that Two-Spirit is to help us. I think it was Barry that said, to help me explain to other people who I am. Because I know and understand who I am, but that identifier helps other people.
Christy, I know that you've been through a journey recently in claiming your Two-Spirit self. Can you fill out a little bit about what that was like for you, what the journey's been to this point, and how it has been able to center you and your life?
Like from the beginning? it's been very hard. It took a long time for me to be able to even claim that with respect, because I didn't feel like I could, just because of, it took me a long time to even claim being Indigenous because of how we didn't talk about it when we were kids, and we didn't, acknowledge that fact growing up and stuff like that. So it was very hard for me to even, think that it was okay for me to. And after speaking with, my elder and my auntie and stuff, and she's like, you are Indigenous, honey, it's okay. Like, it's very hard for anyone trying to reconnect. It's tough. It's hard to, like I said, I'm going to stumble a lot because my anxiety is ridiculous. It took a long time and a lot of searching and researching, I suppose, and watching and studying to try and even be able to say that, yes, I am Two-Spirited, and that I was confident in saying so, because for someone else to hear that and not understand was what I was afraid of. Like, I know who I am and I'm very proud of the stuff I've come through and everything like that. But for me to actually say it and be understood by anyone else, even in my community, was the trouble for me. So yeah, I grew up very, well, I'll start with my mom gave up her Indigenous heritage to be with my dad. She gave up, yeah, everything and was baptized Greek Orthodox. So therefore even furthering the disassociation from my heritage. So as I grew older, I started taking it back every bit that I could. After having religion forced on me, I was like, no, this is not for me. I'm going to steer a different direction. I'm not opposed to anything like that. My Nana is Irish Catholic. I'll still go to church with her because I love her dearly. Even though it's not for me, I respect everyone else. But yeah, so as I went more towards my Algonquin heritage and my Indigenous ancestry, it became more apparent to me that I wasn't just a tomboy, like my dad had told me. And I wasn't just, you know, I didn't need to conform and be this and that and the other thing to be accepted by society. So I just decided to be me, whether that was jogging pants today or a skirt tomorrow or whatever I felt like being that day, it was all just who I was. Another aspect to me was I grew up very frightened because I saw spirits all the time and I didn't know what it was. And because my father was very religious, that was cut off. That was, it's wrong. You just see nothing. They're bad dreams. You know, I mean, the escalation of then inputting the fear within myself. So as I, you know, started to accept this part of who I was and my spiritual path, I started to accept seeing these beings as well. And it became more open. I began to be able to convey these messages to even my husband about his grandparents and to my father about his uncle, like his brother and stuff like that, my uncle. So it was accepting who I was and accepting all aspects of my culture very much enlightened who I was. And even the two-spirit aspect, even though it took me so long to be able to claim that because of, you know, the disassociation with my grandfather to begin with, and then my mom and myself, you know, we're always able to reclaim that. And like I said, it was very hard, but I'm very proud that I did. And I'm happy to claim that I am two-spirited and sharing that with everybody.
Thank you so much, Christy. And I know this is one of the first times that you're sharing these kinds of revelations publicly. I just want to remind you, you're doing awesome. Mode, I'd love to invite you to help us understand a little bit more about trans and what the Trans Artivist Project does within the community. I know one of the things that you do is work with people that have a disconnect between the way their voice sounds and the way they present physically. Love to learn a little bit more about that.
Okay, so trans is an umbrella term that is used, generally speaking, to talk about people who identify somewhere on the spectrum of, you know, either feeling like the body that they currently have is not the one that they have, that they identify with, and sometimes that makes them choose to have either medical interventions such as taking hormones or having surgeries to correct the way that they feel and identify. So these surgeries can include top surgery for people who were assigned female at birth, who actually feel male, or vice versa, like for people who were assigned male at birth to get the bottom surgery done in order to have proper vaginoplasty, so they have the equipment that they believe that they should have. And it's important to acknowledge that everybody should be able to have the body that they feel that they should have. So in terms of trans is used as a generic term for everybody on the spectrum, unfortunately. Including people who are non-binary. Some people who are intersex are sometimes called trans, That's not really accurate, as this is a condition that you are born with. You are born with ambiguous genitalia, and it's a very medicalized kind of thing. So in terms of what I was just talking about, there's often a disconnect for many people who are in the trans spectrum community. And I tend to use trans spectrum as a term simply because there are so many of us and there are so many different aspects to being trans. Some people choose never to transition. And I'm using that in a medical concept in terms of changing the body that they have. Some people keep the body that they have. They don't have any changes of hormones or surgeries. So no matter which body you have, if you're having issues, for example, with a disconnect with your voice, this can cause a lot of problems. Because the voice is how most a lot, especially like now in the days of Zoom, where many people, even including myself, there are times I have to turn off my screen because the mess is just too bad behind me. I think that a lot of people make assumptions about voices, and we've been taught that different types of voices are gendered. So we assume, many people would look at me and see that I have large mammaries, and they would hear my voice and assume that I am female automatically. They would look, depending on how I'm dressed, they would make assumptions. Well, in the same way, the way that we speak, the tones that we use, the voice that we have, can be assumed by ourselves. We take it on to ourselves in terms of, this voice sounds really masculine. So for example, my wife, Katrina, has been transitioning now for 3 years. She has gone through her bottom surgery. She's been taking hormones and as a result has developed a more female appearing physique. However, her voice is still quite deep because she was in her 50s when she started her transition. So as a result, there was a lot of disconnect. And there were often times that she was mistreated because people perceived her as being masculine because of her voice. So this causes a lot of trauma. And this is why Trans Artivist Project has started a program for people who are on the trans spectrum, who experience what we call dysphoria, vocal dysphoria, and helping them to reconnect with their voice. So this program helps individuals who have this vocal dysphoria through singing and working with the voice and coming to terms with the variety of voices that are out there. So for trans women, finding pieces of music that are easy to take in and do with a deeper register, and it's really wonderful to hear what has come out of that and to see that in person. So this is something that we feel is really important to support people in being their whole authentic self, and that's what we're doing with our Out Loud project.
Thank you so much, Mo. Now, one of the things that you brought up that I think we need to get a little deeper into in a number of ways is how being either misgendered or having someone assume a gender due to the sound of your voice or the appearance of your body can be very traumatic when it is counter to how you feel within yourself. And then one of the other things that I know is being misgendered through pronouns, which is part of why I invited people to add their pronouns if they felt comfortable doing so. Barry, can you maybe help us understand a little bit about what this can bring about in the LGBTQ plus community when there is misgendering that is being happening due to either pronouns or appearance and voice?
Sure. I think, you know, it ultimately comes back to what I was saying earlier about the basic act of respect that we generally show people, that we're taught to show people when asking something as simple as what your name is. You know, someone tells you their name when you meet them, you know, you shake your hand, they say, "Hi, I'm Barry." Or maybe they give you a nickname, or, you know, they tell you that they go by, I don't know, B. Just coming off the stuff off the top of my head. And our response is generally not to then say, "Well, no, actually, I'm going to call you this instead." And if that's happening to you on a daily basis, constantly from everyone that you're encountering, it wears on you significantly. I don't really have any like specific statistics handy, but, you know, we know that this has a severe negative impact on people's mental health. And, you know, we often when we're talking about this, we will talk about how, you know, we understand that people make mistakes. You know, I've talked to other trans and non-binary people who, you know, sometimes we misgender ourselves or we'll make a mistake. You know, it's not that we're saying that this will never, ever happen. But I think what a lot of people don't realize is, you know, even if you just make an honest, you know, an honest mistake one time, you don't know if that is the fourth or fifth time that day that someone has misgendered this person. So from your perspective, it might be, "Oh, I just made a mistake. I'm sorry." But for all you know, that could be, you know, just one of many times in that same day that this has happened. And so what you may see as one simple mistake is actually really like a breaking point in that person's day. And so that's why it's really important that we put our best effort in not making these assumptions, and you know, really doing what we can to, again, show everyone that same respect that we will show someone when we meet them and get to know and you know, learn what their name is. I think pronouns are an extension of that to me just makes sense. And I think that basic respect is so important, and it's easier than a lot of people think it is. You know, I don't want to discount the fact that it can be an adjustment for people, and this might be new for people, but I think a conversation that we're having far too often these days is people telling us, you know, "Sorry, this is just so new to me and I just can't get it." And often the people saying this are the people who it doesn't feel like they're trying, you know? And so I've started encouraging people to get away from that mindset of, you know, I'm just never going to be able to learn this, because there are plenty of people who have, and it really is as simple as thinking of it as an extension of, you ask for someone's name, that's the name you call them. You ask for someone's pronouns, those are the pronouns you use, you know? And that's why also at the beginning I mentioned not getting so hung up on trying to learn every label and feeling like you have to know every single letter of the LGBTQIA plus acronym. Because I think if you start to overwhelm yourself with that, you get too distracted from the basic point, which is it's just about showing respect to that individual. You meet that person, you learn their name and their pronouns, and you respect that. It can be that simple. You don't need to learn every single term and be an expert on the queer community. And I think Mode is mentioning that they have some stats, which would be great to hear as well.
Yes, I was going to call on Mode, and just before Mode shares those stats with us, I wanted to just share a very brief thing about gender for in my family. My brother's partner's child changed their name and requested that she, her pronouns no longer be used. They do not feel like they are a female person. And I had not seen that child for a while. When I met them again, I said, I understand that you have chosen a new name and pronouns. Can you help me understand what you would like me to call you? And the joy on that young person's face when I said, you know, I know we've met before. My name's Morgan. I use she, her pronouns. How am I to address you now? They were so incredibly happy. And we had a wonderful half hour conversation about how important it was to that child that I took that time. It was just 2 moments and it turned into a half hour conversation. It was wonderful. So Mode, can you help us understand what those stats on suicide due to misgendering entail?
So I want to clarify. So suicidality is the idea of committing suicide. Not everyone who feels suicidal acts upon it. Someone who considers it may take steps but might not follow through. And I think it's important for us to understand that, you know, in the general population, suicidality is something that is something around a 20 to 30% suicidality rate as a general population. However, within the trans community, the suicidality rate is 71%. Think about that. For every trans person you may know or not know, it's important to think of how much trauma that they're experiencing every time someone misgenders them or who attacks them for being simply who they are. A friend of mine contacted me the other day and has told me that they are being harassed at work by somebody who insists that they are not a real boy and go around making quotes about Pinocchio, I'm a real boy, while they're at work. It's harassment and it's something they're enduring every day. So there is a high suicidality rate and it's very traumatic to continue to have to deal with misgendering and being questioned about our identities. So I want to leave that with you and think about how many people are committing suicide because of that. And on top of that, think about the different challenges that trans folk have and two-spirit folk have because our identities don't match what everybody thinks we should be. We experience a lot more problems in terms of being able to get and keep a job, to succeed in school, to get housing. And it affects us on every level. So it's no wonder that suicidality is so high in our communities.
I'll chime in there.
Thank you, Holly. I was going to ask you if you had anything to add.
It's something that I speak to often, and it's appropriate given Pride Month, and it's appropriate given Indigenous History Month. So, you know, I have to speak to Indian Residential School and Indian Day School. And what people often either don't know, forget, or care not to acknowledge is that the Two-Spirit people were at day school. The Two-Spirit people were at Indian Residential School. And I've had the honor of sitting with many of our Two-Spirit elders who are survivors I'm a generational Indian residential school survivor, a generational Indian day school survivor. So what that means is I went to day school, my parents went to day school, and my grandparents on both sides went to Indian residential school. So, and just speaking to the impacts of those systems for the Two-Spirit people, what people don't know and they need to be educated on is that when our people came out of those systems, because of the nature of those systems, assimilation and whatnot, when our people came out of there, the Two-Spirit people suffered greatly because now it was unsafe for them to be in their own communities. It was incredibly unsafe for the Two-Spirit people to go back to the reserve, to go back home to community because of the indoctrination of homophobia and transphobia into our communities. And today it is very, very deep. Homophobia and transphobia is deep in Indigenous community. And we're only just seeing, we are seeing some progress, but not without challenge and not without force in some instances. And it's an incredibly difficult place to be because now, not only am I unsafe in the white man's world, I'm unsafe in my own family, in my own community. So you're really feeling this, you know, you're really feeling those impacts. And of course, I hope everybody has some knowledge. And if you don't, that's okay. That's why I'm here is, you know, there is an overrepresentation of our people in the jails, in the prisons, in the child welfare system, and certainly an overrepresentation of our people struggling with mental health and suicide. We have high numbers of suicide in generally, but let's compound that for the Two-Spirit people, because again, when you feel, when your family and your community has been so significantly impacted by those systems of Indian residential school and Indian day school, again, it's no longer safe for us to be in family or community, but again, it's not safe to be in white society either.
It sounds like a very difficult place to be when there's so much intersectionality. We do have some questions that have come in from our audience. And first, I would like to call on Juanita to ask the question that she's wondering about.
I've been thinking a lot about this over the years, but especially since we had a new baby come into our family just over a year ago. Raising kids has been so gendered for so long. I worked hard not to be that when my son was born like 31 years ago, and I think I did okay. But what are some better ways to be open to all or any genders in a new person? And I guess if there's any words of wisdom or thoughts about how to have conversations around that with family members who aren't necessarily open to that idea.
I'm actually going to ask Christy first, because I know Christy has a young child, and I have a feeling that this is something that is discussed with herself and her child's other parent
all the time. My daughter's four, so I try and tell her every time we leave, because she used to walk up to the counter at Tim Hortons, go, "Hey, lady," and I'm like, "Honey, no, honey, we don't do that." It's just like she's around my very old world Greek father a lot now too, so I have to talk to him and be like, "Dad, we can't say this man driving or this woman driving. Like, I know you have road rage, but we can't direct that towards a specific race or gender or anything like that, because then my younger generation hears it and we can't continue on the trauma." So yeah, it's a continuous conversation with the older generation for sure, especially since he's very old school and very orthodox. So it was It's very hard to be like, dad, you can't say, hey, bro, or like, thanks, brother. Like we have to meet in the middle now. Right. So I try to just convey to even my little one, like, no, we're not going to say, oh, the lady or, oh, she, or, you know, I'm like, no, the child or the person or they, you know what I mean? I get her to use they, them more than anything. I use they, them more than anything because it's the least offensive, I find. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But you know, like that's how I approach things, is the most moderate I can, I suppose. Like there's only so much you can say to the children because they don't understand, right? But with her getting older and being four, yeah, I correct her all the time. And I'm like, no, honey, they, or the person. That's really how I base it. I also show her a lot of things too. Yeah, I don't know, just correction. Same with older people or people that don't tend to accommodate, I suppose. Yeah, just consistently correct them. And if they don't feel like they need to be, then that's not someone that I find I particularly need around. If you don't want to be a good influence on my child and the future of, you know, the world and myself as well, then you're kind of not welcome to be around until you work on that little bit.
Thank you so very much, Christy. And Mode, I know you have something you'd like to add. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so Juanita, you asked like a whole bunch of questions and they were connected but complex. So, you know, when it comes to how to raise a child in this world, I think the first part is just, like Christy was saying, let's not assume anybody's gender. I know that I've been blessed by having a child who also chose to transition. And so when a kid tells you, I'm not the name that you gave me, or I'm not a girl or I'm not a boy, I'm something else, then I think part of it needs to be accepting that and taking the time to educate yourself and continuing to always be in an open relationship with them so that you are open to hearing what their truth is. And so that really takes more personal reflection on your part and less making assumptions. And that also goes with the quote, traditional gendered roles. And I was raised in a French Canadian / Dutch European family. And to say that I broke those molds is putting it mildly when it comes to how my partner and I chose to raise our kids. There were no gender roles. Everybody does dishes. Everyone does laundry. Everyone helps with groceries and digging in the garden and all these other things. There are no, quote, gendered roles. It's just these are jobs that everybody does because we're part of a family and we support each other and we love each other. So I think that We need to address those. And like Christy had some really great suggestions in terms of not making assumptions about people's identities. Yes, thank you so much, Juanita. Everyone raised to be a fully functioning adult. Absolutely. So that's what we're aiming for, is that everyone is able to contribute to society and do things for themselves and be part of community. I think community is the part that we often fail to talk about, is that, you know, we're always talking about individuals, but we need each other. We, as humans, we are part of each other. We are connected to each other, and we need to be in community or we feel disconnected and we lose hope, we lose senses of self, and the more that we can come together and support each other and feel supported, the more that we're going to feel empowered to do things for others as well.
Thank you for that, Mode. And Barry, what can we learn from the things that happen at Out on the Shelf, ARCH, through the education? How do the organizations that you're involved with help with this question?
Yeah, for sure. I think I first want to say this is a huge, huge topic, and it's very relevant right now. I think on a larger scale, there's been a big conversation happening around this. And so, I mean, this could literally be its own day, because there's been a big discussion happening around sort of what do children understand, and in terms of this, and how do I explain these things to my child? And I think it's really important to recognize that, you know, studies have shown that children as young as 3 years old have already started to internalize the biases that we are taught. And, you know, for a child who later in life will realize that they are gay or trans, how much they are taught and how early they are taught about the fact that queer people exist can really impact their own journey to understanding themselves. And, you know, if a child is able to understand or isn't too young to know, you know, that straight people exist and that cisgender people exist, then there's no reason that they can't know that gay people exist and that trans people exist. And similar to what I was saying earlier, you know, every child is also an individual. You will know best what your child is able to understand and what you're able to have a conversation with them about. And so I think we try to put really specific timelines on it. But the reality is that, you know, again, if they're old enough to see, you know, watch show after show that have straight characters in them, you know, then what is the harm of knowing that also two men can love each other? We also know that as society becomes more understanding and open, and as people have become more understanding and open, young people have more and more been identifying as queer. I think, you know, we see statistics recently have been showing that far more than the, you know, I think a lot of us were taught the 1 in 10, the 10% of people are gay or 10% of people are queer. And I think studies have been showing more and more that young people, a lot more than that, actually do identify as queer, or gender fluid or sexually fluid to some degree. And that really comes from just being in a more accepting society and more accepting environment. So it's, from an organizational perspective, it's very important for us to have programs for youth. A lot of those are just getting started up again after a lot of things stopped happening due to quarantine, and a lot of places being closed. Out on the Shelf, we don't specifically do programming that is just for youth, but any of our programming is always open to youth. Whereas at ARCH, we do plan specific youth programming, and also programming for families is very important to having programs that allow queer people to also bring their family into a program and learn together is really, really huge. But yes, I again could go on forever because it's such a big topic, but Holly has her hand up.
Thanks, Barry. Holly.
Just very briefly, in keeping with Indigenous worldview, You know, if we believe ourselves to be part of creation, creation is not stagnant. Creation is not standing still. It's always shifting and moving. So as Indigenous people, we have a connection and relationship with the land, and we see ourselves reflected in nature or creation in the land. And so Indigenous parenting is also reflective of that. It's also shifting and moving. It's about choice. We're very much a spirit-led people. And some folks may have heard, you know, when our children are welcomed into the family and community, you know, there's ceremony that happens. And we're really not just welcoming that, you know, physical being, but we're welcoming that spirit into family and community. So in doing that, and as a child grows, we're able to be with them and allow their spirits to lead, to allow their gifts and abilities to lead. It's Indigenous parenting is very much about experience and very much about spirit led. Again, it's colonization that has boxed us into these gender roles. Some folks may have heard, you know, the basket and the bow. When a child is, you know, do they choose the basket or the bow, which there's a gender binary reflected in there, but it wasn't about what was between your legs. It was about what is your gift, what is your ability. Anybody can be, you know, a hunter. Anybody can be a gatherer. It's not about it's about gifts and abilities to us. So allow a child's spirit to lead. I raised my children on a gender binary simply because I didn't know any better. That was what was indoctrinated into my family and community. But when you know better, you can do better. So again, I guess the message that I want to leave here is, again, if we believe ourselves to be part of creation, just continue to remember that human beings are creation, and we're always shifting and moving. We're not rigid.
So Tanya, if you can let us know what the next question is, please.
Okay, yes. There's one question that I'm going to direct to Barry. How do asexual people fit into this discussion? The question is a two-parter, like, what is it exactly? Mm-hmm. And how does the asexual person fit into this discussion?
Yeah. So in terms of what that means, asexuality refers to, it's a sexual orientation and refers to someone who does not feel sexual attraction in a way that we are taught to believe that we all do. And I think, again, this is an important identity to talk about. Again, what I was saying earlier, which is how individual it can be. So just understanding that it doesn't mean the same thing to every person. Some folks who are asexual might not want to engage in any sexual activity at all. So they may feel, you know, they may feel that is just not something that they want. And for some asexual people do still enjoy sex, but they might just not feel that same sex drive or sexual attraction that, again, I think we're taught to expect everyone just has. But like I said, it's very individual, and people, it's always important to understand that people have their own reason for using labels and might have their own idea of what that means for them. In terms of fitting into the conversation, you know, when we're talking about the LGBTQIA+ community, we really are talking about a community that is for anyone who does not fit into the labels of straight and cisgender. So asexual people naturally fall into that because, again, it's about not identifying with the ways that we're taught to understand you are supposed to feel when it comes to sexual desire and romantic desire, and then also and gender identity. In terms of fitting into the conversation, it is also their community because they are also not heterosexual. Yeah. So hopefully that somewhat answers it. But again, it's such an individual thing, and I wouldn't want to speak over asexual folks on the topic because I myself am not.
Okay. Thank you. You mentioned the term labels, and one question was struggling with labels like gay and queer.
Queer is also one that can mean many things to different people. I hate to keep giving that answer. I'm sorry. Hopefully people feel like we're still answering the questions here. You know, queer is, first and foremost, it is a reclaimed slur. So queer was a word that was used against LGBTQIA plus people in an offensive way. And for some people, it is still offensive. So it's important not to just let you know, assume that you can call anyone who is part of the community queer. That's not necessarily something everyone feels comfortable with. But for many people in the community, it is a term that has been reclaimed and become sort of an umbrella term for the community. But then also for a lot of people, it's also a political term. So when I sort of describe myself as queer, I usually am doing that in a way that is meant to be political and is meant to identify the fact that my sexual orientation and gender identity are for me a part of how I experience the world and a part of how I want the world to change. I use it very intentionally in that political way, in a disruptive way, to really say for me that I don't want to necessarily be seen as just sort of the same. I think we get this message a lot of, you know, there's the very popular same love movement, I think was an idea for a while. The idea of love is love, which is a very important movement in terms of furthering rights for the LGBTQIA plus community. But I think one thing that we've started to see more and more within the community is this idea that we also need to embrace the fact that we are different, that everyone is different, and that there's value in that difference. There's a lot to the term. I think it can vary depending on the use. I think when you hear people talking about something like queer rights activists, I think that generally is a little bit more of the umbrella use of the term, because they are talking about the rights for the queer community in general.
I think the important thing to remember is that different people will claim different labels for themselves. And for some people, saying I'm queer is like a flag you can wave in the air and go, I am right here. You tried to kill me. You tried to tell me I shouldn't exist. I'm going to take that flag and I'm going to wave it like a furious flag that it is. For some people, that same term is something that does them harm and causes them to have panic attacks. It can be something that can be really painful. So I think it's important to take your cues from the person that you're hanging out with. I wouldn't go around using the term queer as a general term. For if you're not part of the community, then I would suggest that you let other people lead the way. Listen to queer voices. Listen to people who are part of the community. If you are a cishet individual, if you are not anywhere on that spectrum, please listen to other people and use terms like the 2SLGBTQIA+ community. Amongst ourselves, you know, within our friend groups, we sometimes use the alphabet soup group or the alphabet soup gang, because it's so hard to say all those letters sometimes. But that's something that is done within our own groups.
within our own communities. So if you're not really sure, always ask. It takes a moment, and it's just like, oh, hey, so I'm cishet, or I'm, you know, if people ask me, oh, so you use they, them pronouns. Are you part of the LGBTQ community? Yeah, I am. I'm gender fluid, and that's that. And so what term could I use for you? Oh, well, I don't mind queer.
I know many trans and non-binary adults. None of them appear happy within themselves. And their identity seems to be achieved in their recognition by others rather than pride in themselves and what their achievements are. So I wanted to address that because I think this is something that I've definitely heard people say before. You know, the work that I'm doing right now isn't specifically in counseling and therapy, but that is work that I'm qualified to do. It just doesn't happen to be my current job. And so it's work that I've done before. And I think and this goes back to sort of two things that I mentioned during this meeting, that I think people don't realize, because you know, that recognition by others isn't just a matter of, you know, needing to be seen. It really goes back to what I was saying before about sort of basic respect. You know, when you meet someone and you learn their name, that is the name that you call them. And if people were consistently refusing to call you by your name every time you introduced yourself to them, that does start to wear on you. Like you would be feeling disrespected by everyone around you and everyone that you see all day. And so I wanted to acknowledge that that recognition piece is not just about an insecurity in yourself. It's about how people are treating you. And we live and have to interact with each other all day. You know, we are social beings to varying degrees for each individual, but certainly, you know, you can't really exist in this world separate from other people. And then the other part that I wanted to talk about is that respect also relates to so many other larger issues. So while someone on the outside might sort of see it as, oh, this person is feeling so hurt just because someone won't use their pronouns or use this name that they've chosen, and they see that as the only issue, what they're not seeing are the underlying issues, which are that lack of respect is the basis for so much other harm, you know? And so as much as that might be the issue that you're seeing, you're not recognizing all of the other ways that person might be dealing with difficulties because of how people treat them. And so when I'm doing support work one-on-one or even in group settings with queer people, there's usually two aspects to it. You know, there are a lot of different approaches to counseling, but for me, what I usually focus on is I focus on a strength-based perspective. It's about recognizing what supports you have, what skills you have, what you have that can actually help you. But I have found that on its own isn't enough, because the strength-based perspective can sometimes fail to acknowledge the fact that there are a lot of things out of our control. So I usually try to combine a strength-based approach to support work with an anti-oppression approach to support work, which that is about acknowledging, hey, there are forces acting upon you that you do not have control over. And we still need to make space for that and talk about that, even if there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, there are some things that we can do about it, but often people, when they're in that space and they're struggling, they don't realize that there's anything that they can do about it. And so I always want to start the conversation with saying, you know, let's acknowledge the fact that homophobia exists, that transphobia exists, that racism exists, that these are things that are impacting your life on a day-to-day basis. And it's not your fault, and you don't necessarily have control over it, or you don't have power to necessarily change it. And then by combining a strengths-based approach with an anti-oppression approach, I will then start helping people, sort of guiding them towards how can you get involved in the community? How can you maybe find space where collectively with other people who are facing the same issues, you can either support each other or start doing the work that, you know, is aimed at changing the system.
Thank you so much, Barry. Yeah. We are actually over time. So as much as I would love to continue this conversation, we're going to have to press the pause button for today. Thank you so much to Barry from Out on the Shelf and Arch, Holly, a Two-Spirit Knowledge Keeper, Mode from Trans Artivist Project, and our local Indigenous maker, Christy, another Two-Spirit Indigenous person that was present today. Thank you all so very much for being open, honest, and accepting of the questions that those of us that are still learning have.
And that's all for June 30s, 2022. Thanks to the Breezy team of Kevin Bowman, Morgan Dandy, Tanya Gavart, and Phil Ugg. Music is provided by Jewish Germ. I'm Jiayu Yin, the producer of the Breezy Breakfast podcast.